ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It is a truth universally acknowledged that on one's 250th birthday, there should be a celebration. I'm Claire Nichols, and on The Book Show, we're raising our teacups to Jane Austen.
Why Austen? What is it about her?
Authors Colm Tobin, Karen Joy Fowler, and more will explore why, in 2025, the Austen effect is bigger than ever.
It's quite incredible.
Dear Jane, on The Book Show Mondays at 10 on ABC Radio National or anytime on the ABC Listen app.
We are living in a world where humanoid robots not only exist, but can be invited into your home as the ultimate multitasker, supposedly capable of vacuuming, putting away your groceries, maybe even brewing a decent cup of coffee. The reality, however, is a little less Rosie the Robot and a little more glitchy tech demo. So how is the slow creep towards robot servants going? Why are companies still betting big on humanoids? What jobs can they actually do right now? And what security issues come with having a robot in your home that's potentially, mostly, controlled by humans somewhere else? This is your guide to technology and culture. My name is Ray Johnston, and welcome to Download the Show on ABC Radio National. Helping me unpack all of this today is Chris Berg, Professor of Economics at RMIT. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
And Jennifer Dudley Nicholson, Future Economies Reporter for the Australian Associated Press. Welcome back, Jen.
Thank you so much.
Now, Neo is the humanoid robot that's supposed to do your chores. But Jen, what exactly is Neo supposed to be capable of? And how does that compare to what Neo can actually do?
It feels like a person who kind of lied on their resume. So Neo promises to do a lot of things. So we're talking about the Jetsons, Rosie the Robot, do all of your household tasks. So, you know, clean up around the lounge room, pick things up for you, make sure that it does the dusting, it does the laundry, it packs the dishwasher, these sorts of things that it can just free you up to do the important stuff, which is kind of what we'd all like to see AI do rather than taking away all of our creative tasks. However, it turns out, like a lot of humanoid robots, it may not be ready to do all of those things just yet. So in a demonstration, it was actually found that a person, an actual human, was controlling Neo by virtual reality in another room. And potentially it's going to need a lot of training in all of these tasks to actually complete them.
It's just incredible. I've seen some of the videos of Neo failing to complete very basic tasks. And even the ones that it is completing, it's taking the longest amount of time to actually do them. So I'm curious as to who is behind Neo's creation and how they feel about this very public failure. I don't think anyone is looking at Neo and saying this is a good idea. Chris?
So I think that's right. And it is a bit of a public failure. But I think that's because of the business strategy that the Neo creators have actually adopted, which is that there is a lot of competition that we can see in the humanoid robot space. There's a really big company in the US called Figure. There's an enormous number of Chinese manufacturers and developers. And clearly what's happened here is that Neo thought, well, you know what? We will be first to market. We will actually put these in homes as soon as possible. And frankly, the model that they are proposing, the model that we have seen versions of that a few journalists have also been able to play around with, is a bit undercooked. But I don't think that tells us a lot about the humanoid robot market. I think that just tells us that the first one out the gate is a little bit underwhelming, because fundamentally, a lot of these models are able to do at least a version of the sorts of things autonomously that the Neo robot seems to need human control to do so. So it may not be in the next couple of months that we see a humanoid robot doing chores in wealthy families' homes, but it will be in the next year or two. And I'm actually very, very optimistic that we're going to see a lot of this roll out much quicker than you think.
I think it appears, to me at least, that one of the main hurdles that Neo is trying to overcome is that, yes, it can be trained in a lab somewhere with someone's kitchen that they've built for purpose, but everyone's homes are completely different. So in order to be able to gather all the training data to allow Neos to work autonomously within your home, I mean, it's not like training a Roomba, which, you know, even they don't do it correctly, I've noticed. They end up adding rooms to your map and things like that. So having Neo mostly human operated at present, yeah, having someone remotely control your robot until the company builds up enough of that training data to operate it successfully in every variation of home. If you've got a camera on a robot in your home, looking around your home, and someone's in an office somewhere controlling it, are there security concerns with that?
Yeah, there well could be. I think I'm actually not convinced that the approach that Neo is taking is going to be the correct one, which is that you get lots of robots, human-operated robots, and you train off that. Because I think that the AI models that we're developing now, the models that drive ChatGPT and Gemini and Claude and Grok and all these models, they are of sufficient generality. They are capable of doing so much general work that I actually think that we're remarkably close in getting that sort of audio-visual capability into the general models that we use every day. So in one sense, I think that the teams that are going in the other direction, I think they're going to have a bigger chance to win. But that does tell you a lot about those potential cybersecurity risks, because there are a lot of really complicated challenges around making sure AI models act safely and act in a way that their users want them to, that they, when they do the dishes, they're not just not dropping the dishes, but they're also not walking out the door with the dishes as well. And these are basic things. They're not unsurmountable hurdles, but I think that's where the robotics company will be focused on at the moment.
I think one of the things that the videos of Neo trying to complete basic household tasks highlighted is how weirdly inefficient and disjointed the human body form can be. I'm curious, Jen, why are companies continuing to push humanoid robots as our household maids when it does seem that other forms could be way more efficient? Is this some type of retrofuturism fetish that we all have?
It really does seem like that. And also, I mean, you could make the argument that there's something fundamentally wrong with humans that we keep trying to replace ourselves, and then we worry that we might be replacing ourselves. I mean, I guess there's an easy assumption to make there, that if this is your form and you've been, you know, doing this for a long period of time, you've been walking around cleaning the house for a long period of time, then something created in your image would do the same thing. But I don't know that that's the case. I've seen a lot of robots falling over while trying to run. But then again, when we create a robot dog that can also, you know, open door handles, that does look quite freakish as well. But in all of these things, I think that there are a lot of challenges, gyroscopic challenges, challenges with trying to make a dexterous hand like a human's, for example. We're a complicated, weird bag of meat. And I think it's very difficult to kind of recreate that as a robot. I think also in this case, it's been really interesting to see how much a company could underestimate how complicated cleaning can be. Because as you say, there's a lot of different variables in people's homes. But also, I've never had a cleaner because I don't know where things go, and that's why they're out and they're not tidied. I would have to make a series of decisions. Like, maybe the robot would say, I'm sorry, you know, your bookcases are full. We don't know where to put these books. Neither do I, bro. That's why they're out. And so it's a very complicated challenge. And on top of that, you've got the complicated challenge of trying to recreate a human for some reason.
Chris, what kinds of labor are realistically suitable for a humanoid-shaped robot?
Well, I mean, so the reason that they're humanoid shaped, I will actually point out that the Jetsons robot doesn't have legs.
You're right.
The Jetsons robot is on wheels. And there are some sort of humanoid robots that are coming into the market that are based on wheels, which I think makes a lot of sense, because it's the legs that are the hardest part.
Absolutely.
But the reason that that people are building humanoid or human type robots is because our houses are built for humans at the moment. So the benches where they would want to do the dishes are of human size. So everything is built around and structured around a human form. So instead of rebuilding our houses, which would be very expensive, obviously, why don't we build the robots so that they meet the humans' environment rather than vice versa. Because, of course, we've had robots. Robots are a fundamental part of all manufacturing and have been for decades, but they've been specifically designed for very precise needs. What we need them to do is to do the sorts of things that we find tedious. Now, I think there's a few interesting things about that. First of all, they don't have to do it exactly the way we do it. You know, sometimes these robots are really, really slow, and it is funny to see the robot videos that are sped up 10 times, and you think, wow, if I watch them at 1x speed, it would be incredibly tedious. But it kind of doesn't matter. If you've ever had a robot vacuum, the fact that it's slow doesn't matter because you're not doing the vacuuming. You're just waiting for it to, you're doing other things and eventually the vacuuming get done. I think in that sense, there's a whole bunch of mindset shifts that we're going to have to adopt if we want to get used to these sorts of robots. But I'm really excited about them. I can't wait to not do chores again.
So you'd invite Neo into your home, Chris?
I don't know why I invite Neo, but I'm really looking forward to getting a robot because, you know, these robots, so Neo is about $20,000 US, the first Neo model. I've seen estimates of other models, the Figure model, in and around that price. So for the price of basically an entry-level new car, you could buy that. Or you could buy a robot and not do any of the washing up, not do any tidying, all that stuff. And that's not a terrible trade-off, is it? Do you want a new car or do you not want to do chores?
Look, I understand the end promise, but I think at the moment what we've got is $20,000 for a robot that you're training. It's like having a child again, a tiny child again. Jen, are you ready for that?
Yeah, there's an 11-year-old kid in my household, and I reckon for $500 a month, which they're US dollars a month that they're talking about as a subscription fee, I could pay him to do a lot of this stuff, and he'd probably...
They're much harder to train.
He could complain a lot, but I think it's ultimately better. I also have stairs in my house, and I'm not really sure if this thing can't do the washing up, then it's certainly not going to get up those stairs.
Well, look, if nothing else, it would definitely be entertaining, at least, to just watch it lose its centre of gravity constantly. It's just a delight. If you haven't seen videos of Neo failing at surviving, basically, doing what it's supposed to be doing, I do implore you to take a look because it is absolutely wonderful. You are listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you. And I'm joined by Chris Berg, who is the Professor of Economics at RMIT, and Jennifer Dudley Nicholson, who is Future Economies Reporter for the Australian Associated Press. And this took me back to a time of exploding phones. Qantas and Virgin have just grounded your portable power banks, at least in the cabin. So, Jen, what kind of incident triggered this crackdown? Is this reminiscent of 2017 Samsungs?
Oh, my word. Can I make a confession, please?
Yes.
So before we knew that particular phone of Samsung's, which was the Note 7, and you won't find them anymore, was dangerous, I brought one home from Germany and I charged it with a power bank on a plane.
Double whammy.
I carry this absolute guilt around with me, but we didn't know at the time that act was was very, very dangerous. But moving on from that one particular phone, and it was just that one particular model, the power bank problem happens far too often. And the problem is with phones, they're very well tested. You know, they've got the company's branding all over it. They want you to come back and purchase another one. Samsung does not want that to happen again.
Mm.
But with power banks, they can be created by all manner of brands. Even some of the good brands get this wrong. They can be created poorly, and they do. Batteries are filled with volatile chemicals that they shouldn't mix because bad things happen. They happen very quickly. And on planes, they happen in an environment where it's basically the worst case scenario.
So when do these new rules take effect? Is this from right now, Chris?
So they're going to come in over the next couple of years, or next 6 months, I should say, depending on which particular airline. Some airlines already have them. I was on an Emirates flight a month or two ago, and they've already got these rules. Now, the rules are pretty simple. They say that you can't use your battery pack to charge your phone while you're on the flight. You can't use the in-seat power to charge your battery pack, and you have to keep the battery pack in your seat, the seat stowaway, not above your head in the bins. That's pretty reasonable. I think one of the big challenges that we've had about these, it's not just that the batteries are often of a lower quality, or they don't have as much sort of protection, or they don't have as much ventilation, like the cases don't have as much ventilation. It's just, if you're charging your phone using a battery pack on a plane, you're not probably not touching either of those devices. If you're charging your phone using the seat power or something, you might be holding your phone. Right. That's also true. You might be holding your laptop. We tend to know when things heat up. We tend to know when our phones or our laptops heat up. We don't always know when our battery pack is heating up. And if it's overheating, we'll disconnect it, but we don't tend to know that about battery packs. So this is a pretty reasonable measure. Obviously, there is a pretty important safety measure. We don't want to have fires in airplanes, but at the same time, I think it does speak to a degree of chaos about what people can bring, what sort of stuff people bring on planes, and how we expect to be able to live an entirely digital life in the air as much as we do on the ground.
I do think fondly of the days when being on a plane meant that no one could contact you at all. And now the proliferation of Wi-Fi and being accessible, even at that point, I'm still actively resisting against it. But okay, so what do we need to do right now to stay as safe as possible and make sure that we don't get in trouble at airport security? Because I am scared of those people.
There's a list of things. So definitely go and check that your device hasn't been recalled, I think is one of the first things that I'd recommend, and go to the ACCC website. But with these regulations, particularly on Qantas, Jetstar and Virgin, which are coming in December, they've also required that you don't take them over a certain capacity. Now, the tricky part with this is you're going to have to check your battery, and it's probably going to be measured in milliamp hours. So I have, for example, a 12,000 milliamp hour battery, but all of the requirements say you actually have to work out what it is in watt hours. So you're going to have to Google a conversion. Turns out mine's at 44.4, which is completely acceptable. All of them under 100 watt hours are acceptable. But with Virgin, you can go up to 160 watt hours, but you have to get approval above 100. So I would recommend just not having to go there unless you absolutely need that battery pack for some reason. I would also recommend making sure that they're not damaged in any way, because if you have to carry these in your carry-on and a fire starts, not only is it going to be disappointing and you're going to be a pariah for all the other passengers around you, but your snacks are going to be ruined.
Oh, the most important thing. We can't have that happen. You are listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you, and I'm joined by Chris Berg, who is Professor of Economics at RMIT, and Jennifer Dudley-Nicholson, Future Economies Reporter for the Australian Associated Press. And Friend AI promised to be your digital buddy, but instead ended up sparking a huge public backlash. Chris, who is behind Friend, and what was their pitch when they launched this device into the wild?
So Friend is produced by an American startup. The idea behind Friend is that AI is not only for productivity, it can also be your friend as well. And so the Friend company makes a device that you can wear around your neck, or you can carry with you in any way, and you can chat to it. It can engage you in conversations that you're having with others. It can provide you psychological support, friendship, whatever it is that you want or desire from these AI robots. So in one sense, it's just a physical version of a whole bunch of products that are already out there in market, including, of course, people who use ChatGPT for advice and friendship and as a sounding board and so forth. But because it's a physical device and because people can see it, it's become a little bit of a lightning rod for a lot of feelings that a lot of people have about the role that AI plays in society and as psychological support for a lot of people.
So what I'm hearing is a Tamagotchi that's highlighting all of the psychological issues that are being developed around chatbots.
An extremely chaotic version of Tamagotchi who will talk back and will record your conversations for you as well.
So when we're saying that Friend is supposed to be listening and supporting you, what does that actually mean, Jen? What support is it offering?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I've read a few reviews of journalists who've tried that, and listen and support seems like cheerlead and agree with whatever you say, which is dangerous for some people. Like, some people should not have agreement with what they're thinking and feeling and telling to the weird pendant that is around their neck. I think that one of the best things about having a friend and a friend who you truly respect the opinion of is that if you suggest something stupid, like it's really hot in the Australian summer, I think I'm going to shave off all my hair, they can turn around and say, no, that's a terrible idea. You're going to get sunburnt in places you've never been sunburnt before. Whereas if you said this to an AI companion, they might say, yeah, that's a great idea. Here's some razors that I recommend. I think that having that sort of support where, you know, and AI chatbots in general are designed to agree with people. You'll ask it a question, you'll ask it to fetch something for you, and it will say, yes, that's a fantastic idea. Here's some suggestions. And there are some controls put in place to stop it agreeing with you when you say really terrifying things, but not all of the time. And I'm also concerned with the listening component as well, because this collects data all the time, is recording your conversation, is making transcripts, and potentially even the founder has admitted that it's not as secure as it needs to be, and it's that data isn't as accessible as it needs to be to the user just yet. But in version 2.0 of your friend, maybe it will be.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of problems there. I'm hoping then that there is some evidence at least that friend is actually helping some people feel less lonely. Chris, do we know if that's the case? Is there any evidence for this?
Look, I haven't seen any academic evidence, but there's, let me put it this way. There are now nearly 1 billion users of ChatGPT, just ChatGPT alone. The vast majority of that use, to the extent that we know, is not for productivity. A lot of people are just using it as sounding boards, as calculators, as idea generators, those sorts of things. I'm doing that. I'm sure that many listeners have been using it not just to do PhD-level mathematics, but also just to have it create a few ideas for you or answer questions both for work and for life. So I suspect this is what people mostly want from AI. They want that general technology. Now, the AI companies have started over the last year or so really to realize the implications of that. And now if you use the frontier models, so the models that are provided by companies like ChatGPT and Google and Anthropic and so forth, they're not actually as supportive as they used to be. They're not just going to say, yep, you're a genius, go ahead and shave your head. That sounds fantastic. I can't believe nobody's ever thought of that before. You are one of the smartest people. They don't do that anymore. They're not as sycophantic as they were. And they were sycophantic because we were trying to get them to do useful things to start. But now that they already do useful things, now we're trying to get them to be supportive in the broader sense that you're talking about, which is, you know, tell us when we've got a bad idea as well as when we've got a good one.
Now, I believe they were also quite sycophantic because a lot of the benchmarks that they were measured against was how much people enjoy using them. And obviously, a more sycophantic model is going to be more enjoyable to use. So
exactly.
They were ranking higher.
We were literally training them because they would get rewards if people liked their answers. And turns out people like it when robots agree with them. Now, that's not a good long-term strategy, turns out, but that's how it started.
When did public reaction shift from curiosity about friend AI to outright hostility, I think, is a very fair characterization of this, Jen?
Yeah, they made a really interesting choice, and that's to advertise to New Yorkers.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so they had a massive public advertising.
A famously friendly group of people.
Right? Like if you want to have strong opinions that don't just agree with you, ask a New Yorker. And they had a lot of campaigns through public transport areas recommending that you replace your friends with this particular device. If trolling had a billboard, that is what it would look like.
Oh no.
And so obviously these were graffitied. People made their ideas about replacing humans quite well known. And it was quite funny. So in a way, it did help it go viral, but it didn't necessarily get the message across that friends may have wanted.
Why do you think it is that it struck such a nerve, this marketing campaign?
I think trading on this fear of humans being replaced is not a great way to sell your product.
Mm.
I think that it sounds like anyone who's seen the movie Her will understand why it's a terrible idea, or the movie Companion or the movie Terminator. I think that advertising those parts of it make it very difficult. I think that people turn to ChatGPT potentially when they don't have many other places to go and they want some advice. But I don't think putting that on a billboard and advertising your loneliest moment and thinking about whether you could replace the human race with a very cheap and ill-thought-through device is your best strategy.
Would you use Friend AI, Jen?
I have a soft spot in my heart and a weak spot in my wallet for really stupid technology. I have so many different brands of smart speakers. I have a Chumbi at home. I still love the PlayStation Portable Go. I will not purchase this device. I don't need a really weak source cheerleader around my chest recording all of my conversations.
What about you, Chris?
Look, I probably won't buy Friend. I am really looking forward to the next generation of smart speakers that have the modern LLMs, the modern ChatGPTs and whatnot. So, and apparently OpenAI is working on a new physical product as well. Friend doesn't really meet my needs, but I can see there might be some people that it does.
Hey, and maybe if we have some of the modern LLMs in our smart speakers, we'll end up using them for more than asking what the weather is and setting timers.
I certainly hope they can do more than that, yeah.
You are listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you. I'm joined by Chris Berg, who is Professor of Economics at RMIT, and Jennifer Dudley Nicholson, Future Economies Reporter for the Australian Associated Press. Now, just quickly, Meta's latest AI tool is aiming to make your Facebook scrolling a little smarter. Chris, what is Project Luna? What does it do for users?
So the idea behind Project Luna is that it's just a simple summary of your Facebook feed. So in theory, it's a summary of all the interesting things that you have identified you are interested in that you'd be able to get once a day or every time you opened up your feed so that you wouldn't spend all your time scrolling down it. Now, in one sense, this is the sort of thing that AI should be really, really good at. Meta has spent some time trying to figure out what it should use AI for, given that it's got some pretty good models, and this is their latest experiment. On the other hand, it's also just a bit, well, it's not dull, but it's not the most impactful thing that we can use this technology for, given, you know, my television has a latest news update as well. I think everybody's seen latest news updates. I hope that we can use this tech for even more interesting things than that.
Yeah, this definitely seems a little bit more practical, useful than previous, I'm thinking generative AI efforts in particular from Meta. Is this an intentional shift, do you think, Jen, or is this something that's happening alongside other efforts?
I think this is happening in conjunction with a lot of other efforts. I'm actually really shocked by it because it might actually be useful. it might not actually just scrape my data for you know, no purpose at all. It's also interesting to me for two reasons, because first of all, I don't know whether you've been to Facebook lately, but it's filled with ads mm-hmm. and suggested posts to try to get you to keep scrolling to grab your attention. I just want to see updates from my friends. That used to be the case. I find them really hard to find now. If my friends are still up there updating, I'm not seeing it. If, you know, Meta could make some efforts to actually summarize the people I'm interested in, that would be great. Also, I guess a lot of this could rely on news as well. And Meta have come out and repeatedly said to Australian regulators that news is not a big part of their platform. I would like to see news in a, you know, in a briefing update that I get in the morning. And if news is part of that, maybe news should be part of Facebook.
Something to keep an eye on. Unfortunately, that's all we've got time for on this episode of Download This Show. Chris Berg, where can people find you?
I am very easy to Google, but I work at RMIT and my name is Chris Berg.
And Jennifer Dudley Nicholson, where can people find you?
They can find a lot of my words at aapnews.com.au and spread to all facets of the internet, and also Gen Zian on Instagram.
Wonderful. And thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a review and a rating while you're there. Share it with a friend. My name is Ray Johnston, and you've been listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.